Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I'll be your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs every first and third Sunday of every month. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain-injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. On Another Fork in the Road, I want to raise awareness of traumatic brain injury and to help others to understand what survivors and caregivers are experiencing. And I want also to know that to help others to understand that survivors can accomplish much. On previous shows, I told of my husband, David's, and my journey through the TBI maze. If you missed those shows, you can find them in the archives at on demand at blogtalkradio.com/brain injury radio. Now, this is where I always remember to tell folks that it's a good thing to have a pencil and a paper nearby, so that you can jot little notes down when you find something that you find interesting and you might want to keep it for later. So you can also find my show, and I think this is actually easier because you can find any show you want of mine on my blog, and that's called SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. All you need to do is click on the air, under the category section on the right sidebar. But that's not on, it's on the air show menu. There are two categories. You want on the air show menu. That will list out about 200 shows that I've already done in the past 10 years, almost 10 years. So yeah, so check that out. And you might find a lot of other stuff on the blog that you might find interesting too. It's all dedicated to brain injury, basically. Not only traumatic brain injury, but any kind of brain injury. So on some shows, what I do is I will interview traumatic brain injury survivors and their caregivers. I will delve into their journeys to see how they traverse their world of TBI. On other shows, I will have guests such as therapists or other medical professionals. I also have a panel that comes on every other week. And we discuss pertinent topics related to TBI, depression. Let's see what else I'm going to. Depression, fatigue, anger management, flooding, stress. Oh, I mean, the list can go on and on and on. So I hope that you're going to find my show fun and informative tonight, and I hope that you'll visit the shows of the other hosts on Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m. every weekday. And on the weekends, our shows start at 5:30 p.m. till 10 p.m. And that is on Pacific time. So all you need to do really is to translate your time zone into Pacific time zone, and you can listen in while we are live on the show. So if I make any bloopers, you will hear them live. Of course, if I make any bloopers, you'll hear it on the podcast later because it automatically goes to a podcast and it's not edited out. So, yeah, so if I do, you're going to get it no matter what. So, check out, if you can't listen live, check out the podcast. It does go into a podcast after we air live. And like I said, it goes on to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com at On the Air show menu. So I bet you didn't know that the Brain Injury Radio airs across every state in the United States and also in 36 different countries. But what's really cool is because it goes into podcast, you can always listen to the archived show at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. So you're never going to lose out. We're always going to be there for you. So now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So tonight, we're doing a continuation show, which happens occasionally, not real often, but it does happen occasionally, because we had so much information going on 2 weeks ago, and we just didn't finish with everything I prepared and wanted to share with you. So my guest 2 weeks ago was Deb Brandon, who is a brain injury survivor and an author. And I'm going to give you a little bit more information about Deb in just a few minutes. But first, I'm going to tell you what we're going to talk about, and then we'll introduce Deb. So the show we did 2 weeks ago was about coping with irritability. I bet you can all probably relate to that, because many survivors experience forms of irritability after a brain injury. And it's not surprising, but because irritability, angst, agitation, and frustration, no matter what you call them, can affect somebody with a brain injury. And it can turn their daily life upside down without them really understanding the reason why. It just happens, and it's very frustrating. So irritability not only affects the survivor, but it also affects the lives of the family members and the friends and those people that, you know, love their survivor. And so it can cause real agitation in a lot of different ways, not just for the survivor who is personally dealing with a brain injury, but for other folks too. So we're going to continue our conversation from that last show 2 weeks ago on irritability, on how survivors and caregivers can deal with this uncomfortable and often hurtful behavior. It can be really pretty grim, you know, when somebody's irritable and they take it out on you. It's not fun. I mean, even in normal, real, everyday life, that happens, and it's not fun. So we have to think about that, and we're going to talk about some ways that may trigger it, and some ways we might be able to offset it. So first, I want to introduce Deb. She's waiting in the wings here, or the green room, as we say. And Deb is a brain injury survivor, and she's the author of her book, But My Brain Had Other Ideas: A Memoir of Recovery from Brain Injury. Deb is a retired professor of mathematics at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And I always like to say those are my old stomping grounds, because I have a really soft spot in my heart for Pittsburgh. I was born there. I was born right outside of Pittsburgh. And then I went to college there, and so did David. David went to the University of Pittsburgh, and I went to a smaller college there. And I lived right in Shadyside and down in Oakland by the university, and it was a lot of fun. A lot of good memories, I should say. I'm also excited to say that Deb and I are co-authoring a book together, and we're almost finished. Well, we actually are finished with the third and final draft, and we're getting ready to submit this book. So everyone out there, I need all your good juju right now. I need all the good vibes and all your kudos to come, all that energy to come flooding over to Deb and me, because we want to get this book out into your hands, because I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to find it really interesting and informative, kind of like what I say about my show all the time. And our working title is called Surviving Brain Injury Together, conversations between a survivor and a caregiver. So we do talk about a lot of stuff there, a lot of stuff that we talk about on the show, a lot of the stuff that I mentioned earlier about the frustrations and the things like that, about stress and insurance and all kinds of things that you all out there can relate to. If you're going through this, you will recognize and realize a lot of the things that we are talking about are common to you, which is kind of sad, but it is true. So you can read about Deb on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. In the search box, when you get to that website, make sure you've written that down. Type her name, Deb Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N. And a Survivor Speak Out interview will pop up, and so will many shows of Another Fork in the Road on which Deb has appeared. She's been on countless panels. We should probably count them up sometime just to find out, because she's really a regular on the show, and she's been on tons of shows and shared a lot of her good information with my audience, and that's really cool, and I appreciate that. So, but you can learn more about Deb at her own website, debbrandon.com, and please check them out. But wait, not now. Wait till after the show. Don't go there just yet. That's why I want you to write them down. So welcome, Deb. I'm so glad you joined me this evening. How are you? I guess that'd be helpful if I unmuted her. Uh-oh. Okay, let's try that again. Hi, Deb. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Always fun to talk to you. Always learn a lot from it.
Oh, great. And I learn from you, too. And isn't that what we want this whole show to be about? All about learning for everyone. I hope everyone can pick up at least one thing on every show that will help them, because that's why we sit here and chat for this 90-minute period of time or 80-minute period of time. So, yeah, but before we tackle them, before we tackle this irritating topic, unintended, can you tell us a little bit about how you became a member of the brain injury community?
Sure. I have clusters of malformed blood vessels scattered through my brain, and they're thin-walled. They look like raspberries, and they can bleed. They can be either symptomatic or asymptomatic, whether they bleed or not. In my case, I had two that bled. I have others as well, but these two bled and wreaked havoc on my life. And once they bleed, you're at high risk for them bleeding again. So my only option for trying to reclaim my life was to have them removed surgically. And I ended up having three brain surgeries in 3 weeks. And since then, I've been recovering. So recovery isn't, you don't recover fully from severe brain injury. I mean, you might
recovery
to a large extent.
Is a lifetime.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you and David are competing against each other, because David had three brain surgeries in less than 2 weeks. And it's like, hello, one brain surgery is more than enough for anyone, and you guys have to go and have three of them. That's pretty incredible. But you survived. You survived, and not without consequences, but, you know, there is that survival that is a plus. So and I'm glad you're here. Because I'm glad we're writing this book together, number one. That's really cool.
Well,
so,
I'd say that I thrived, not just survived, but I thrived.
Well, and that's even better, you know, when someone says they thrive after something like that. Because you think about, you know, when I was in the rehabilitation hospital with David, and he was so out of it. He was so... His brain was damaged, obviously, from the injury, and he was not able to do anything. He was not in vegetable state, but close to it. You know, he could do nothing. He was a lump in a bed, basically. And to see that a brain injury can reduce somebody to that is just awful. But that being said, I saw a lot of other people in that rehab hospital that were never going to – David recovered quite nicely considering. He has a lot of injury still. He has a lot of disability because of it. But his cognitive brain is perfectly fine. But there are a lot of people that can't say that has happened for them. I saw one young man who, and he really was only like in his early 20s. I think he had, they say he had a skiing accident. I'm not sure what it was. But his hand was curled up. He was uncommunicative at all. He was not aware of his surroundings. He was just kind of there. And, you know, they say it takes a lifetime to recover and you never really recover, but you make small gains. I don't know where he ended up ever. There was another, I mean, there were just tons of people. I'm not going to tell you about all the people that I met there, but there were tons of people that brain injury really is, can cause a lot of damage. And when you say you thrive, Deb, that is really a huge plus that you feel that you've gotten better than what you were before with still having all the issues that you still have because of the brain injury. I know, confusing. So, Deb, what we're going to do today is I want to recap for everybody what we talked about last 2 weeks ago so that we can kind of join these two shows together. We got a lot in last time, but we didn't finish, and I felt that there was a lot of information I still wanted to share. So I'm going to try to do the recap pretty quickly. If there's anything that you need to jump in on, please do. But then we're going to jump into new territory when I finish this. So one of the first things we talked about were triggers, the kinds of things that can trigger irritability, trigger the frustration, trigger the angst or the anger or whatever you want to call it. Because, you know, like for the general public, for everyone, we all get irritated at times. I mean, everybody does. And usually it passes and it's forgotten. It's after some period of time, you know. And but survivors of brain injury are often adversely affected because of the many disabilities they face. So they're not just having the everyday, ordinary frustrations that happen. They're facing things because they're also dealing with cognitive disability, not being able to understand or having memory loss or things of that nature. They're a lack of organization. They're dealing with emotional brain injury, emotional problems with that, or physical, which directly can lead to frustration and irritability. You know, so there's all those things when you can't do something that you normally did easily before a brain injury, it can wear on you. It certainly can wear on you, and it can certainly make you cranky, you know. So some of the things that impact a brain injury survivor are what I just mentioned, the memory loss or the lack of organization. Neural fatigue is a huge one that comes with brain injury. And then, of course, when you want to go out to a friend's, out to dinner with somebody or go out for coffee and you're too exhausted that you can't, that's cause to get irritable. It's a good cause. I mean, it's a good reason. It's not a reason that folks understand necessarily, but it's, you know, it happens. So, that physical disabilities that impede somebody, mobility. David has a lot of issues with mobility. He can't go outside the house without me. He has to have somebody with him at all times because his balance is challenged and he's not able to walk outside on his own. So those are kinds of things that can really cause frustration, or clear speech production, a difficulty with concentration, headaches, sensitivity to light or noise, blurry vision, confusion. All of these things are the result of brain injury. Now, not everyone will have experience every one of those. You can take kind of like a menu, pick and choose which ones affect you and which ones, you know, maybe you don't have at all. David doesn't have any problems with concentration or headaches or sensitivity to light or noise. I'm not going to say he would do that. He would have that. So he doesn't have, he might have some over some things with too much, too long. But basically, he doesn't have those things for someone else, and I know you do. So, it's not, so what I'm trying to say basically is that all of the things I just listed and about a million more that I could list won't be affecting every single person. But you can, you know, kind of pick and choose what does affect you and what that does cause you problems and what can cause your irritability. And the irritability can be caused by both big events or little events. Missing a friend's party, missing a wedding because you forgot, because you your memory went out and said, I didn't know, I forgot it was this day, you know. Those kinds of things can really cause you to be frustrated and angry and irritable. Or even little things like just spilling a glass of water or dropping your pills when you're putting them into your pill box. Those are smaller events that that seem like they're huge when somebody has a brain injury, because it's not just spilling the water. Now you've got to clean it all up. And if you've spilled it on some papers, some important papers, or on your computer, which I've done before, we won't go into that. I saved my computer, though. I will tell you that. Those are some of the things that can happen. So 2 weeks ago on the last show, we discussed the triggers that can cause irritability. And I want to briefly remind you of them. You can always go back to the podcast listed on survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And again, look for On the Air Show menu to listen to the entire show. So you will hear more in-depth talk about the triggers that we're going to talk about, and I'm going to just recap with you right now. And of course, on that show, you'll hear a lot of Deb's comments about it, too, and explaining how those affect her. We're going to just breeze through these until we get down to where we need to start with Deb and me talking about something brand new. Deb and I talking about something brand new. Okay, so one of the things is feelings of negativity, not feeling capable or feeling inadequate. That happens to a lot of people. Frustration at not being able to do what used to be easy. I see that sometimes with David because he'll say, and I could do that before in no time, and now it takes me all morning to get this done. I saw it, I'm not supposed to give examples right now. Oh, darn, but I have to. I saw the frustration in David when he first got out of the rehab and he was trying to dress himself, and he always wore button-down shirts to go to work, and he couldn't button. He could not button those shirts. Boy, did that cause frustration. So that caused a lot of irritation for him at that point. So that was easy for him now. Now we don't have buttons in our house. He doesn't have it in his wardrobe because there's no point. You know, you figure out other ways, strategies, and that's one strategy. Feeling shame because you can't do what you need to do, or feeling shame because you feel inadequate. That's another negative feeling. Comparing abilities from pre and post injury, kind of what I just said about the button down shirt for David. Comparing yourself to others. That's something that a lot of people do when they look at a brain injury survivor. They say, "Okay, quick example here, Steve." Who is a friend of ours who had a brain injury 10 days after David. We met him in the hospital at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital at the time. It's New York Presbyterian now. And Steve had a brain injury, very serious. But he walked out of there and he didn't look at all like he had a brain injury. had no problems whatsoever in that respect. He had a lot of problems. He had a lot of issues with unseen, the invisible brain injury. So that's the thing. You can't compare yourself. I mean, we could say, well, geez, Steve and his wife Judy were out going to restaurants 3 weeks after he got out of rehab. You know, wow, it took us almost like 5 years before we could do something like that. So, yeah, don't compare yourself, because every brain injury is not the same. I mean, they simply aren't the same. They are like snowflakes or like fingerprints. Everyone is completely different. So strategies, what do we use for strategies? Well, you can use affirmations. Shift your negative mindset to a positive one. So with words like feelings like and maybe signs on your computer, on your bathroom mirror, I am worthy, I am smart, I am lovable. Add any positive word. Just make it positive that you are worth it. You're worth it. You're worth it. Even if you have a brain injury and you've got issues, you are worth it. So you keep that, offset the negative, accentuate the positive. Another trigger are the behavioral triggers. And these are triggers that come from impulse control, wanting to do something and not really thinking it through and it not being the best idea. Quick example, wanting to jump off a rock into some water, but not thinking about what's underneath that water that you can't see. Are there, you know, is it too shallow? Are there rocks pointing up there? Are you going to hurt yourself? You know, just a quick example on that impulse control, not being able to really think through and make good decisions. Managing time is another behavioral trigger. Not being able to get things done in time because it takes you longer. So you're feeling horrible because you're not getting it done. Or maybe you aren't focusing on what you need to do. So that's impeding your time control. Trying to do too much. That's one of the things I think that a lot of brain injury survivors have a problem with, because they think they can do everything that they used to do beforehand, and they just, you know, beat themselves up when they haven't been able to do it. I always say, David has a to-do list, and he now knows, I mean, his to-do list is a mile long, but he knows that he can only choose one or two of those things and expect to get it done in a certain period of time. And he has to realize that if he gets that done, good. And if he doesn't get it done, there's always tomorrow. You know, you have to figure it's always tomorrow, especially if there's no pending deadline or something. So, yeah, we all want to get done. We all want to do a lot. But sometimes you just can't. And so you just have to give it up. And don't beat yourself up on it. So strategies. Think before acting to control your impulsive behavior. So you might have to work on that, because if you're having impulsive behavior, you're obviously wanting to just do it. But if you know that you're having this feeling of just do it, try to get that some kind of a strategy in you that says, okay, I want to do it, but I'm going to stop. I better think it through. What is this? Is this a good idea or not? Should I do this or should I do that? Think it through. Again, the to-do list or planner to help you manage time. And remember, you don't have to do a million things. Choose one or two that you can get done. They can't be, I'm going to do the taxes, and I'm going to prepare for a radio show, and I'm going to get my chapter done on my next book. And you can't get it all done in one day. And frankly, you know what, folks? You can't get it all done in one day, even if you don't have a brain injury. So be kind to yourself. You know, accept the limitations and realize that you can only do so much. So relationship problems are another thing that can happen. And things like that are misunderstandings between spouses. And I'm going to pull Deb back in here, because this is where we were discussing this, and then this is where we kind of stopped because we ran out of time. So I got through those pretty quickly. I'm pretty excited about that. So relationship problems. Deb, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good, because I muted you again, so I was making sure I had you back. So misunderstandings between spouses, misunderstandings between other family members or friends and acquaintances, those are some of the problems that that occur and can cause irritation. It can cause irritation between spouses. It definitely can cause irritation between family members, brothers and sisters, siblings, whatever, friends. That causes, you can cause misunderstandings with friends or acquaintances. And it's a feeling of not feeling understood. So I think the main strategy there is communication, talking about it. I think that, and it might not be easy for a survivor to bring up the problem to talk about. He or she may not be able to even identify it. But maybe as a caregiver, maybe that person can, or a friend can, gently bring it up and discuss what's going on. Why are we having these misunderstandings? Deb, what are your thoughts on relationship problems and misunderstandings? Now we can go into more discussion and more talk.
Well, I think especially in situations where communication is really, really important. So when it comes to people who are married, hopefully their communication already is good. But that's not always the case. And if that's not all that was the case, you're dealing with a lot. I mean, as you mentioned, brain injury survivors have trouble communicating in many, many cases, not just for various reasons. Having trouble accessing vocabulary is a big one, not being able to keep track of a conversation. There are lots of reasons. And there's also emotional reasons which people may not think about, and that is, especially between caregiver and survivor who are, spouses. There are situations where the caregiver doesn't want to hurt the survivor's feelings, and the survivor is very sensitive. And then, so there's that issue. Very often survivors don't think, certainly in the early days, don't really think much of how the caregiver is surviving. I mean, they're both going through journeys, but the caregiver is surviving this journey too, not just the survivor. And very often when you have that injury, when you're the survivor, it's when you're most of your life is focused on healing or whatever, or you're and often emotional issues, you tend to not see much outside your bubble. In particular, you don't really appreciate how tough it is for a caregiver to care for you. I mean, for me, this was a revelation because, well, my now ex-husband, I now understand him much better after talking to you as a caregiver. It helps me understand just how tough it was to put up with me. Like many brain injury survivors, I regressed in my mentality. Behaved like a teenage brat. I wouldn't have wanted to have to deal with me, and poor man, he had to, this is what he had to deal with. And some people are great at long-term care, but that's not the norm. In many cases, people are thrust into that role, but either aren't good at it or just can't do it. I mean, that takes a lot out of a person to do that. So in terms of irritability, if we want to go back to irritability, so many aspects of brain injury come into play and cause, well, I mean, everything around you can cause irritability because it's, mm-hmm. it's such a tough, you know, it's a beast. I refer to my brain injury as the bloody brain. Being British, I get to say that without being really rude or whatever. And I used to think of the bloody brain as a malevolent entity that latched onto me and wouldn't let me go. Just by its presence, my whole world was the brain injury, and it's yeah. not fun. It's tough.
No, but not. Not. Well, you know what you said? Well, you know what you said? Go ahead. Do you have something else? I want to go jump in on something you said, but go ahead.
I'm good.
Okay. You said that, it's typical that a brain injury survivor is going to be focusing on himself or herself because these horrible, awful things have overtaken your life. It's almost like an alien has come in and has a stranglehold on you. And you don't even know who you are sometimes after a brain injury because you're not the same person that you were before. Right. You won't have the same capabilities. And all those things that we talked about earlier, with the feelings of negativity and the impulse control and all of that, it makes you angry. It makes you irritable. And it doesn't make you necessarily a very pleasant person to be around. And the survivor is just trying to make some sense, get some kind of control over a life that is not in control anymore. It's totally out of control. And then you thought, your caregiver who is trying to help you but is not getting the feeling that they are being appreciated in any way. And in fact, sometimes when we've talked, and of course we've worked on this book together, so I know a lot of your stories, but sometimes that person isn't feeling very good because he or she is not appreciated. And they're giving up so much of their life and turning their life upside down and in putting impositions on their own world, and the survivor is not appreciative, and it's not necessarily the survivor's fault because the survivor can't understand that either. So it's almost a catch-22 type thing. So when you're saying that you were a teenage brat. And that has nothing to do with normal teenagers. This is just the same. For teenagers, you are okay out there. We know what you're going through. But anyhow, so you're having these feelings and you're feeling irritable and everything and taking it out on your husband. And he's not understanding why you're acting that way because he's not used to brain injury either. So it's a kind of a catch-22 situation where you're both in this this boat without a paddle, pretty much, but trying to find the shore. And you're trying to do it together, but sometimes it's with opposing, maybe you do have paddles, but maybe you're paddling in the wrong direction, each of you, against each other. So it's not going gently down the stream, let's put it that way. So, So what do you do about that then? I mean, you lived through it. So what do you do about that when you're having this big problem of communication and not understanding each other?
Well, in my case, I left him.
Basically,
it can really mess up a relationship really badly.
Yeah.
Now, in your case, you had a different relationship, a foundation that helped you through the tough stuff.
Yes, and I'm so fortunate for that because you know, David and I, and you know, when people get married, they always think, oh, that's my best friend. But somehow there must have been a little more glue there because he stuck, and he is my best friend. And yeah, when this happened, I mean, I told the first neurosurgeon, I told every neurosurgeon that took him off as they were, you know, taking him down into the surgery or before when they told me, you know, give him back to me. I don't care how you give him back to me, just give him back to me. And, Lord, you know, I surely didn't know what kind of giving back to me it was going to be, but I knew that my life would be better with David than without him in whatever way. So, yeah, life hasn't been easy since his brain injury, especially, I would say, go back those 5 years. The first 5 years were pretty, you know, pretty gruesome. They were hard. They really were hard. And it's still hard, and people don't understand it because we make it look better. We make it look like it's seamless and we just do it. But, yeah, and so I could have been irritable. I could have gone that way. David could have gone that way, too. We were one of the lucky ones, one of the lucky couples, I should say, that, you know, went through this storm together and stuck like glue together. But there are a lot of people that don't make it after brain injury, because it is tough. It is that what you were just talking about, the relationship problems, the misunderstandings, and not realizing that for you, you're not realizing that he, until much later, like you said, that he was probably trying to do as much as he could for you. But then you, when you're being that, quote, teenage brat, and then, and you're not realizing what he's doing for you. It's a hard balance there. There's no balance there, actually. Yeah. You know, so, and I think that's a typical thing. I have a lot of friends, and some of them have been panelists on here, that had wonderful marriages before, and the spouse stayed with the brain injury survivor for a long time, but then it came to a point where it became impossible. You know, their lives either became endangered or it just became an untenable kind of thing to live with anymore. And you have to understand that that's okay. I mean, it sounds awful. It sounds terrible when two of my friends left their husbands. It sounds awful. Like, how could you do that? You know, but I understand it totally. And David often says to me, if I ever get like that, I want you to leave. I wouldn't want you to stay in a relationship like that. Fortunately, we have a good relationship, even 19 years later. But, you know, it's not easy. And I have to admit, that irritability thing, it happens to me. I get irritable. Don't tell David I said that. But I do. Things happen, you know, that, and why does that happen sometimes? Well, usually when I'm exhausted, when I'm really tired, because I'm not only caring for David, I'm also doing my own life. You know, I'm working on two different books. I'm working on, I don't know what else I'm doing. I'm doing a lot of marketing for books and things like that. I'm doing a lot of stuff in my life. You know, my life goes on. And so, yeah, sometimes I burn the candle at both ends, and it's difficult. But would I change it? Well, yeah, I would change the brain injury. I would change that. But I would say, hopefully, you know, not to have the brain injury. That would have been nice. But that didn't happen. So, no, I still am happy that I am here to do, you know, to take care of David in whatever way I can. And I have to say, too, it's not just me taking care of him. It's him taking care of me, too. And that's where our balance comes in. So when that happens, it's a much better situation. Another friend of ours who's a panelist here has stayed with his wife who has a brain injury. They've become a lot closer since her brain injury. They have a very good relationship. You know, so it depends on, again, it depends on the people. It depends on the situation. It depends on the type of brain injury. It depends on so many factors. And there's no way you can point a finger and say that this is wrong or this is right. So you just do the best that you can.
And well, one of the things
you do.
It's easy to say is communication really, really helps. If you're a good communicator and you communicate well with your the brain injury, survivors and caregivers communicate, that's really, really crucial. But it sounds easy, but it's not, because there are all those emotions going on. The brain injury survivor, possibly because of the brain injury, because of the physiology of the brain injury, that the emotions are running wild. And the caregiver, because that's a tough thing to take on, and full of frustrations and various other emotions. So communication, it's huge, but not everyone tools to keep that communication going at a level to keep the relationship working. So, yeah,
that's very true.
Yeah, we can say as much as we want, well, communication is important. Well, my ex-husband and I used to communicate fine, but the emotions are the things that took over.
Yeah. Well, you know, and sometimes, too, with communication, I'm speaking as a caregiver. Sometimes I see things that I would like to tell David, but I don't want to hurt his feelings kind of thing, too. And then that kind of wears on me for a while, and then finally I say something, and then I see his face drop. And then I think, darn, why didn't I just keep my mouth shut? But sometimes you just have to say things to clear it, and maybe things can change to be a little bit better for both of you because of that. Because then he understands what's bothering me, and he does. He tries to change it if it does. You know, not that he has, you know, I mean, if he can change it, and it's reasonable, obviously. But he will try to change it. But if someone, no one can change if they don't know that there is something that might be irritating you. Then it goes on and on, and then it gets worse and worse. And I think sometimes that sometimes things get to a point where they can't be fixed at that point. So that's why I think if you can talk to your partner or to your friend, it doesn't have to just be spouse here. It can be, you know, your brother or your sister who's having the problem, or your mother and your daughter or whatever, you know, whatever the relationship is. If you are able to somehow come to some common ground, and it's not always easy. So sometimes there's a person in my family that was difficult for a while, and I would try to talk with that person, and I think, okay, we're making some headway, and then things would just burn. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, what happened? You know, so, and I'm not talking about David now, but it's just another person in the family. And, you know, so you don't, then you're confused. Like, but, geez, why did that go like that? So it's, and if you have somebody that has, and that's just normal. That was a normal relationship. So if you have somebody that's having a brain injury and having all these other problems going on and that they're dealing with and trying to cope with, it can be very, very difficult. The only thing I can say is just keep trying. You know, I don't know. What do you think? You said that sometimes you just can't communicate. It gets to that point. And then I think at that point, like you said, Deb, you left your husband. If it's going to be a miserable situation for both of you, that's not worth it either. You know, you have to make those decisions. Like I just talked about the other two women that I, friends of mine, they had to make the decision. It wasn't an easy decision because I spoke with both of them. It was not an easy decision for them to make, but it was the best decision for them to make. They're both in a better relationship and a happier relationship. And what's interesting is they remain friends with their spouse, which is interesting. You know, so that, you know, you have to weigh your pros and cons. You have to, you know, analyze your own situation and make the best decision for you. Ultimately, you have to make the best decision for you. And hopefully it will, you know, be a good decision for everyone, but it sometimes isn't.
Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty tough one.
Well, I mean, the thing is, irritability creeps into our lives no matter what, whether there's brain injury or not or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Irritability is just there. But brain injury is just, you know, like when you keep something simmering, not right, hot simmering, not at a high enough temperature, it breeds discontent, resentment, irritability. I mean, it's just a very, very situation that doesn't end. There is no end in sight, and that makes it worse.
We're not thinking of a pot boiling away. I did that the other day. I was boiling some carrots in a steamer, and I let it boil down to the bottom of the pot was all bubbly with black stuff. So it's fortunately it was easy to clean. So maybe that's a good thing, okay? You can get yourself into situations there, but you can get it cleaned up if you need to with work. With work. I shouldn't say it was real easy.
Awesome.
I cleaned a little bit, but I gave it to David. So, he'll have to tell you if it was really hard or not. But, So let's go on and talk about environmental issues now. Environmental issues can cause a lot of problems, too. So that would be more like your disruption of routine. For example, if David, this happens to us a lot. I am a person of whim, you know, impulse. I'm kind of impulsive. Well, let's, you know, our day is going along and I say, why don't we go out for dinner? And if I say that on the same day, I should know I'm going to get an absolute no, you know, because it wasn't in the plan. It wasn't in David's routine. And he does keep a routine, and that's what keeps his life on more on an even keel, because he can plan for his day. He knows what's going to happen. And it's not to say he won't adjust. It's just harder for him to, and he will do it if necessary. But it's just not as pleasant. So, but if I say to him, let's go out to dinner maybe tomorrow or the next day, he'll say, okay. You know, then it works. So I've had to learn that I'm going to be disappointed if I say, let's go out to dinner today, because I'm most likely going to get a no. It took me a while to figure that out. But once I figured it out, I realized that, you know, so, and sometimes I'll throw it out there anyhow. You want to, and he'll say, no, I can't, because he has issues with going to the bathroom, and so he plans that. And he does, if he's going to go out, he's not going to drink a lot of water, because he doesn't want to have to go to the restroom out there. So if he's already drunk a lot of water for that day, he's like, no, this is not a good time now. I already, you know, made my plans for the day. Or he's planned his day and he has those things on his to-do list and he wants to get them done. They're important for him to complete. Then I'm going to get a no. So I have to realize that disrupting his routine is not a comfortable thing for him. And it's not going to generally happen. And so I figured it out. That if I want to go out to dinner, I'll say, how about today or tomorrow? I mean, tomorrow or the next day, or ask him when it would be a good time. And then we can go out and have a nice evening or something or afternoon or whatever. So that's one of the things. What about you on disruption of routine? Does that bother you?
I know it used to. I'm much better. But, yeah, it's one of the things that a friend of mine said is that I become more – there was a level of rigidity that happened with it that I didn't have before. So, yes, it did become harder. I didn't deal well with surprises. Yes, even just from the point of view of a surprise situation where somebody says something and I don't think something through, it's not always easy for me to organize my thoughts, for instance, because of you know, organization, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm much worse. I used to love surprises, and I still do, but they have to be within a framework that I'm prepared for. There is a level of rigidity that I didn't have. There was another thing that, and also in terms of routines, my brain cognitively, I think more slowly. So I adjust more slowly to things. But from that point of view, yeah, I do have issues with spontaneity. I didn't used to. I used to enjoy being spontaneous. I can still do it, but within a certain framework. It can't be like a complete, let's go fly to Paris tonight or tomorrow or something like that. I can't, if somebody says, hey, let's go out to eat, I can do that. But I don't have the physical limitations that David has. But other things like, hey, let's invite 20 people to dinner tomorrow. No, that I cannot do. Or even let's invite 20 people for next week. I need more of a warning. Now, a lot of people have trouble with that. I'm a thing, but
yeah, I would have trouble with it.
I'm much less spontaneous than I used to be. Except that then I was, I shouldn't say I'm much less spontaneous, but I'm spontaneous in a different way. I can't make big adjustments in a small amount of time. It just doesn't work. And if I do, it's like, jumping in something head first without looking first. You know, it's sort of, I just can't. I can't afford it. I mean, for instance, yesterday, what did I do? I went to a writing workshop, which was a lot of fun. This is something that a friend of mine wanted us to join her, and she was very set on it, and I knew I'd enjoy it. So I said, okay, even though I had plans to go see a show in Denver later that day. So basically, once it was over, we took to the road and went to Denver. And lo and behold, and I had a blast. Yesterday was so much fun. The workshop was fabulous, and the show was wonderful. And life was good. This morning I woke up with a really bad headache. So I pay a price. If I don't plan to stay, I have to pace myself most of the time. And there are times when things happen and I can't or I don't for whatever reason. I decide, between the looking back, I still would have done the same thing because they had so much fun. And it was a situation where this workshop was offered once. I mean, this is a woman from England who – she wouldn't have offered this workshop again. This was the one chance, and I'd got the tickets for the show several weeks ago, so I couldn't, and it was expensive, so I wasn't going to give up on that. And I'm still glad I did it, but I paid the price.
Yeah.
The being spontaneous is not easy, and there's always risk management in my life. It's always there. And if you tell me, hey, let's go out to a movie – well, if I don't know, cleaning the house, I can't. I'd rather go tomorrow. I mean, if I was, so I do have to plan much more than I used to.
Yeah, I get that. And, you know, the thing is, with when your routine is disrupted, routines happen to help people to be more efficient, I think. You know, when you and you see that happening all the time. I know in the shower, I mean, I just automatically, you know, do the same thing every time. Or when David is getting ready in the morning, he gets his clothes out at night. He has everything out and ready. When he does it the same way every time, then it's easier. It's just a lot easier. You don't have to think. I'm a person who, and I think David actually did that even before his brain injury, because he would get up really early in the morning to go off to work, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, to get into New York City. And I'm the kind of person like, I will do it at the last minute. So I'm in my closet at 6:30 in the morning trying to figure out what am I going to wear. When if I had done it the night before, it would have been a whole lot easier. But it didn't need to be done yet. So that's my MO.
That's a great example, because I never had to. I never needed a calendar. I never put my clothes out for the next day. And now I need to write everything down in the calendar. I have to block out times for certain things. And I set my clothes out the night before. I have to.
Yeah.
And as you said, it's about, because of issues, for instance, with organizational skills, it takes you time to think it through. And do you want to be take that time every single day? No, you would get nothing done. So you have to prepare in advance so that then you don't have to think about it. You just get up and go.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. So routine, it works well for a lot of people, even folks that don't have a brain injury, that they rely on routine, because it's you don't have to think about it. Like you said, you don't have to, what am I supposed to do next? Where should I do this? Doing the dishes, the same thing. You kind of do the same thing every time. You know, the pattern, the routine is the same. And then you can let your mind wander and do something else maybe, because you're not having to focus on what am I supposed to do now. So that, so that makes a lot of sense. We kind of touched on the fact of unexpected social engagements. That can be really difficult. Like I said, for David, he likes to know what's going on. And sometimes I'll just, you know, I'll come to him and say, so-and-so decided to drop in. And he'll go, oh, no, you know. But he'll adjust to it right away. But it isn't something that he would have planned, because it interferes with the routine or what he's already had planned. So that becomes a problem sometimes. But, you know, there's nothing you can do. Sometimes that happens, and it's all part of life. And fortunately, he will deal with it and not become irritable over it. But, I mean, he could get irritable and say, well, I can't do this. Well, you know, but he kind of rolls with the punches after he realizes that someone is coming over. You know, they've already said it, and I've already said okay, because I couldn't say no. So, yeah, but the best thing to do, strategy, is to avoid as many disruptive events as possible. And I can do that sometimes with him, because I can say, well, look, I'm going to go meet them at the coffee shop instead. And that gives him the freedom of not having to deal with the interruption or the disruption. And I have not accommodate the person too, so I'm not offending them because we can't get together, kind of thing. So yeah, that's another thing. Chaotic, busy, or noisy places. Those are environmental issues that can really get you to be irritable, because oftentimes with brain injury, folks have the sensory overload, which you talk about a lot. And my friend Shelley has sensory overload. She can hear somebody tapping the table 5 tables away, and that will really aggravate her. It just becomes, she will become irritable if it continues on too long, and she can't control that. You know, it's just, it's not something that she is getting irritable about because she just is annoyed that they're doing it. It's innard. It's inside. It's something that's really affecting her brain. And so that becomes really difficult. And I know even with David, when we go out and you're going to a restaurant, you know, you don't want to go to one of these really busy, busy, noisy ones. But, I mean, there are times when you do. But it's so good to, go home or to a party. You know, we go to my brother's house for parties for Thanksgiving. We go to my niece's. We love doing that. We love getting together with people. But we have to limit it because over doing it will cause David to, become overwhelmed. He doesn't necessarily get irritable, but it becomes overwhelmed. And you don't want to do that to somebody that's dealing with this. So those are the kinds of things. So what we do is we just shorten them. We shorten the time at the event. We go, we have a nice time, and we don't stay as long as we might have prior to the brain injury. Can you relate to that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do have to watch out with social interactions. I mean, the students had invited me to various occasions, and sometimes I said no, sometimes I said yes, sometimes I said yes, and then canceled at the last minute. And I know people who, I mean, just by that fact, if you're, for instance, a caregiver or a friend of a brain injury survivor, and they're canceling at the last minute, that can be really irritating. Or when the survivor is being misunderstood, they're just tired, and the other person thinks that they're being irritable. I mean, there's so many sources of miscommunication there, and so much petri dish for irritation. I mean, it's just on both sides, and for so many reasons. It's just, I mean, it's really, like, when I think about it, it's almost too much to grasp just how many sources of irritation there are associated with brain injury. It's just innate in the disability, innate in the brain injury, and then the environmental things that affect that, and then the survivor's irritation or whatever it is, fatigue, affects how the caregiver feels. I mean, the more I think about it, I'm just amazed that some people make it. You know, like a spouse who's a caregiver. My God, how do you do it?
I guess I can understand that to an extent. Yeah, it is. It's not easy. But you know, I think by knowing all this, I think part of what happens to us too is in the past 19 years. Since David's brain injury, I have been studying brain injury. I mean, obviously, to do 2 radio shows a month, to do my blog and write my articles and write the books, I have to have a little bit of knowledge of what goes on in a brain injury world, you know, and the repercussions it causes to the people around them, around the survivors as well. So, I think that's an advantage for me, because I do understand a lot of the things that are going on, where a lot of people just don't. They don't get it. So, it's not saying anything about them that it's bad. It's not easy to get. You know, it's just not.
I mean, a lot of people don't even realize that there's something to get. I was talking yesterday at the writing workshop. There were actually a couple of women who had brain injuries. And it was like, oh, my people, you know, it was just so wonderful. And I remember at one point I said to a friend of mine, I just feel so alone. And she didn't understand. She said, well, of course you're not alone. And I said, I feel isolated. I feel like there's no one who really gets it. So when you do meet a brain injury survivor, or a caregiver meets another caregiver of a brain injury survivor, it's this, oh, my God, you're my people. You get it. You really get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And too many people don't get it, and they can't. I mean, it's not that they don't want to. They just simply can't get it because it's too obscure, I guess. It's too, I mean, especially when you look at somebody who is has no brain, you know, has no outward signs of a brain injury. Look at you.
Right.
You know, why, nobody is going to look at you and say, oh, you've got a brain injury, so why are you having this problem? You don't have any, you know. And with David, you hear because they can see that there's something wrong. But then on that case, then they overstep it and say, you know, that he's not capable and he's not, I don't know what the word is, but he's not able, you know, when he actually is and could be much smarter than many of the people that think that he's not, you know, that kind of a thing. So they just don't understand it. And it's not, let's put it this way. You can understand a broken bone. You can understand the healing process of it's going to get better. You can understand when somebody gets cancer. Even people are understanding the dementia things and those kinds of diseases that are happening to folks. They understand those more. They understand the repercussions and the consequences of them. But they don't necessarily understand what happens to somebody when their brain becomes damaged or hurt or injured. No, they don't get what happens. And I think it's because I think the doctors and scientists don't really get it that much yet. We're learning. We are learning. It's becoming something that is being taught and it's being studied. But it's so not the brain injury is brand new because it's been forever. Think of Fred Flintstone with, bopping Barney over the head with his club, you know, that kind of thing. So it's been around forever, but I don't think people realize the impact of it. I know as a child growing up, I don't think people realized that when a kid fell off the swing and hit his head, that he had a brain injury, you know, or when he fell off his bike, he had a brain injury. And maybe some of the things were happening to that child. Maybe the learning process in school was affected by those kinds of things. And hopefully, I think what's happening now is are becoming a little more aware.
Well, I mean, what would you do if you, as a teacher, you meet a kid who's got anger issues? What's your first, I mean, most people, what is their first reaction? Oh, geez, I have to deal with this guy. What's wrong with the parent, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So he could easily be a brain injury.
Exactly.
The enormity of the impact of brain injury, I think even brain injury survivors don't quite get it. I mean, I know that the reason why I started writing about it was to help me understand.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that this was so huge that I didn't have the capacity to understand. And I wanted to. And that's why I started writing, to understand it.
Exactly. So I'm just going to do like a laundry list here just to sum up this now because we're running out of time again. This is a good topic. But so what are some suggestions that you can, I'm going to offer some suggestions, kind of like a menu, and you can kind of pick and choose what things you might be able to best, what would best work for you and your survivor, as a caregiver or a friend of somebody, try to be gentle, try to be supportive, be understanding. These are hard. I'm not saying they're easy. Try not to take the behavior seriously. Don't take it personally. If you're like when Deb, when you said you were being, you know, obnoxious, an obnoxious teenager kind of thing. You weren't doing it because you wanted to. And so, but I'm sure your ex-husband took it that way. He took it personally. So I'm trying to say that, you know, try not to take things so personally if you can. Remember that if you are a caregiver or a friend of a survivor, you're also human. So take a break. Realize that emotional changes are not the fault of the survivor. Try to stay calm. Don't argue. That never works. I wish I would learn that. But I always, okay, David, you can get me on this one later. But don't argue. Try to just be, I don't know, I'm going to argue probably. Anyhow, provide reassurance. Do some deep breathing. Use some calm music. And time out in a quiet area to regroup. And that's not just for the survivor there. That's for the caregiver too. But I think most of these things were for the caregiver, for the friends of the survivor, to try to make it a little easier. For outside help and resources, support groups. Try support groups in person or online. Or peer support, pairing up with another survivor with similar difficulties. I think Deb and I have a peer support group in a way. Even though she is the survivor, we talk about survivor issues and caregiver issues all the time as we work through the process of writing this book together. And same thing with David, peer support. I pair up with him. We talk. So, yeah. So those are some of the things that I think that would be helpful. I hope that if you're listening, that you can pick at least one of the things we talked about tonight and try it. See if it doesn't help you out. You're in a tough spot. You're in, what is that, between a rock and a hard place. I never know what that means, but I never understood that, but I kind of know what it means. But you're kind of between a rock and a hard place when you have a brain injury or you're a caregiver. You got to work it out. You got to figure it out the best way that you can to make your life the most comfortable and pleasant for both you and your survivor. So on that note, I have to say adieu. Oh, and how can I have, I can't get through this show without saying happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. My Irish heart, O'Donnell, yeah, I'd say so, wishes everyone the luck of the Irish today. So, yeah, and I hope you meet lots of leprechauns. They're really cute. So, I want to thank Deb for joining me tonight to talk about this irritability. Who would have thought we could have talked twice, two shows on this? But, yeah, there's a lot to it. So you can learn more about Deb Brandon at her website, debbrandon.com. Check her out also on a lot of the panels on survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just put her name in, Brandon, and it'll come up. Many, 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 many things will come up that she has been a part of. You can read interviews from other caregivers and survivors on that same blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. You can find all kinds of resources, brain injury resources, itty-bitty giant steps. Guest bloggers have put on there. And I must say, the blog has won 3 awards in the past 3 years. So it's got some good stuff on it. And then also you can find out more about my book, which I never even said anything about today, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. Check it out on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, or any of your local bookstores. Or just Google me, Donna O'Donnell Figurski. You'll find out more than you ever wanted to know about me. But it's okay. I'm an open book. That's funny. Okay. The next show will be a talk about it show. We're going to just talk about whatever my panel wants to talk about. So, yeah, that should be really fun, too. So remember to tune in every second and fourth Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, folks, to listen to Lisa Dreyer, host of Mess with MS. And on the first and third Sundays, I will be here to talk with you as well on another Fork in the Road. So, So if you loved my show, please tell 10 of your friends. And if you hated it, well, don't tell me. But tell 10 of your friends. It doesn't make any difference to me. So, yeah. So I'm going to see you in April. I think the date is April 7th. I'm looking very quickly right now. Yes, April 7th. We'll see you right here for a Talk About It show. Okay, I think I was just cut off. Oh, no, I hear you. So maybe I'm not. I'm still, maybe you're on the phone. Well, anyhow, good night, everybody. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and I'll see you same time, same station, 2 weeks. Good night.
Thank you. Bye.